It's Monday the 5th of December 2016. This is John Thayers of Gloucester Rugby Heritage. I have with me Chris Collier, also from the project, and today we're at the home of John Haynes, who has kindly agreed to talk to us. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Now, I think, first of all, we'd like to start off and talk a little bit about where you were born, your original introduction to rugby, and the people who influenced you in those early days.
First of all, I was born in Tredworth, in Gloucester, and my earliest recollection of really rugby was my dad was a former player at Widden Old Boys, and he used to take me to watch them play, and also go on an away trip, which is for a young lad was an incredible experience. But so I always had the desire for rugby from that, but it wasn't until I went to the Cripp Grammar School that rugby became a big part of my life. At that time, the school rugby had Cyril Edwards was the sports master, and he was taken over by Ian James.
Horace Edwards, wasn't it, in fact?
Oh, yes, you're right.
He taught me as well, because I went to the crypt as well.
Pio Cantu Cerebramus. I still find it amazing that you go in the old Crypton's clubhouse and when they start singing, they sing the old anthem.
Yeah.
And as you know, you had to learn that.
That's right.
Or you got the cane or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, Horace Edwards, I beg your pardon. That's right, yes. And Ian James,
it
was a Welsh B trialist,
yeah,
I think. And I just connected with Ian James, and from there the rugby just developed, really. Well, my love for the game developed. Didn't actually do anything tremendously at school, other than play for the local, you know, the school team age group. From there, on leaving Crypt, I could have played at that time. Tredworth had a rugby team, Widden Old Boys, because my father had a rugby team, Old Cryptians, because I was then an Old Cryptian. But I was up in town one day and bumped into some lads I played against who played for Lindon Road, and they were playing for the Gordon League. And they said, "Why don't you come up?" And I went to the Gordon League, and that was it. From then on, I really sort of developed as a player.
And was that in the back row at that point?
Yes, it was. There was a lad called Mike Spud Taylor. He used to play open side, and I used to play blind side. Nick Syson was the first team open side. But I became a blindside. When I was at the Gordon League, they were affiliated with the boys' clubs.
I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, affiliated with the boys' clubs. And from that, I got selected to play for the England boys' clubs for two seasons running, and eventually captained them. And John Fiddler was in that team.
All right.
Yeah.
Was John Bayliss in the team as well?
Well, John Bayliss would have been before me. But he definitely wasn't, yeah. John Bayliss wasn't in the boys' clubs when I was there.
No, that's right. No.
But yeah, but he would have been before me.
Yes,
but
of course he was. Yeah, I know he did play for them lower league.
That's it, yeah. Clubs,
yeah. And for Gordon League, of course, didn't he?
From Gordon, yeah.
Before and after.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Yeah.
And from that, I decided that I wanted to try and test myself and see how far I could go. And those days, you just used to literally go down to King's Home, said I'm available and have a trial. Not like that now, you completely changed. But and that's what we did. There was three of us went down. Paul Butler, who is a cousin of Peter Butler, myself and a lad called Pete Cochran, and we went down, and Paul stayed for half a season. I think Pete stayed for a full season, and I stayed obviously for quite a few years.
What's it like going down initially? What sort of reception do you get? You get all sorts of stories about it.
Well,
you know,
I mean,
speak to you or whatever.
I never experienced that, but having said that, I was with two colleagues or friends from the Gordon League, so I didn't feel isolated. The first year down there was when Bob Clues' first season as well, and Mick Potter. And Mick Potter's probably the only one of us who hasn't changed a bit in looks as he was playing. lovely guy. And I thought, who's this guy? Bob Clues, I don't think Gloucester really come across somebody like Bob with his ability to beat defenders. And he was quite a, you know, a player. And he got straight into the first team, as did Mick Potter. But no, I didn't find that, I was a bit, it's a bit wearying, because when you played, you know, it was full on. Right, they were saying, well, you're down here at Gloss now, this is what it's all about. And I remember tackling John Bayliss on one of his crash runs, and his legs were still moving, and my arms were still around him. So, it's the physicality and everything else. But I didn't feel isolated or estranged or whatever the word.
Yeah. What did you make of Mick Potter? Because, of course, he'd come from Coney Hill, hadn't he? I mean, he was an established player in local rugby. And that bit older, too.
Yeah, he never bought a drink. That was Mick Potter. No, he was great. I think he was a very quiet man, probably a bit overawed, if you like. I don't know if that's the right word. Because I don't think he expected to go straight to the first team, or I can't imagine he did. But he was. And when you used to play touch and stuff before, and you get people selling dumb, you think, oh, he's a good player. But Pop would just run up and down the touchline, get the ball passed back. And you thought, well, what's he got for that? You know, but I mean, he had a hell of a lot, and he was a tremendous workhorse and carrier, they call them now, don't they, in the back row. Yeah, he really was, and he just settled into it. He kept himself to himself, Pop, and settled in, and that was it. Very, very highly thought of amongst, you know, his fellow players. He really was.
Well, just fantastic commitment he had, didn't he?
He did. He'd go down on the ball, they kick the hell out of him, and he'd get back up, and he'd go down on the next ball and kick the hell out of him, and he'd go. They weren't going to beat him, you know. And his defence, his ability to turn men over with the ball in a tackle, a bear hug, was fantastic.
He had a great game in that famous win over London Welsh.
Yes, yeah. Of course, then height wasn't a consideration for the back then at number 8, because you always at that time had Dick Smith. It was when you did a peel off the back of the line, it was Dick. They usually fed it off. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't something that Pod had to take into consideration during his game. But the hard basics of playing number 8 was, he was very, very good at.
Mm-hmm. Of course, you played in that London Welsh game, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Yeah. I was
fantastic performance by Gloucester.
It was. I remember being told that I was going up because a Dick had played in a trial. Mm. And he was in line, I think, for an England cap then.
Yes.
He played very well, but he had picked a bit of an injury. So I went up as a travelling reserve and sat down for breakfast with Mike Nichols and somebody else, you know, and just sat there, ordered the biggest breakfast I could, as you do. And he had a phone call, came back in and said, Aynor, you're playing. I couldn't eat a thing after that.
Well, for the record, we ought to say that was the quarter-final against London Welsh at Old Deer Park in 1972.
That's right, it was. And that was, and also Nigel Jackson came in for Alan Brin, who'd hurt his shoulder playing, and he was in line for a cap, was due to play in the next international. So we weren't given any chance. I mean, they had John Dawes, Gerald Davis, JPR Williams, you know, the list, Franklin, the list
British
is
Lions players.
British Lions in the second row, internationals in the back row, Mervyn Davis.
That was the time when everybody was in awe of Mervyn Davis, weren't they?
He was just an incredible player, but he would jump and get the ball, Pop would grab him, turn him round at the R ball. And we just did what we were very good at. Nigel Jackson, Jacko won the line-out ball, which gave us a go forward, as they say now, and we were quick in on the breakdown, myself and John Watkins and Pott, and basically played, went to Mickey Booth, and if he didn't kick it, Tom Palmer did. And I remember, because we'd won the cup after that, you would get invited up to the Middlesex Sevens, and I remember in the change room John Dawes walked in and said, I wonder which seven forwards they've picked. He didn't have a very high opinion of us. I think that probably summed it up.
Somebody was at the game with me. I didn't see it myself, but he claims he saw Mickey Booth coming off in floods of tears at the end.
It was
so emotional about it, because as we said before, nobody gave Gloucester a chance.
No, they didn't. We were the dogs was an understatement. I mean, London Welsh had absolutely thrashed everybody before, playing a wonderful open game of rugby. And then, as I said, we went up, we stifled the line out, did very well in the scrums, then the breakdown because of that.
Mm.
And they didn't really get a look in. And when we did, we were all over them, you know.
Mm.
It was all heart. It
yeah.
came from being a Gloucester,
yeah.
you know, a Gloucester team, if you like. It was all heart. And the crowd were fantastic. I remember walking, they had temporary stands up
yeah.
at Old Deer Park. And you had to walk from the changing rooms, which were sort of a good 100 yards away, in, and we came into a gap in between these temporary stands, that scaffolding, and the roar and the Gloucester, you know, and it still does this day send the shivers down your back. It was just, you thought, we can't lose, we just cannot lose. And fortunately, never. Then we, of course, went on up to Coventry and drew with Coventry and went away as the way seemed. So.
Yeah, yeah. That was quite a game at Coventry that we didn't play in that
one. No, it was reserve. Dick Smith had got over his injury and came back in.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.